I'd like to welcome Dr. Pamela Pittman-Brown to the Caregiver Summit 2. She's a credentialed gerontologist, a fellow in the Academy of Gerontology and Higher Education, and an assistant professor in Georgia at Albany State University. She's a frequent contributor, reviewer for academic journals and magazines on aging and sexuality issues. She's been a guest lecturer on sexuality education and aging at Baylor University Medical School, and has taught aging and sexuality at Eastern Michigan University since 2012. She is a longtime education ambassador for SAGE. Welcome, Dr. Pamela Pittman-Brown, to the summit.
Thanks, Anthony. How are you today?
I'm just fine.
So great.
Let's jump in here. What exactly is sexuality and what is normal sexuality?
That is an excellent question, Anthony. What is sexuality? So when we're talking about sexuality, you know, a lot of people think that it's only one thing, you know, sex, penetrative sex. And what they don't really understand is sexuality is so much more than that. So a lot of times, you know, they don't understand that it's just, it has to do with your, not only your biological sex, but also your sexual parts, which includes your culture, your religion, your experiences, and not just that, but like, how do you as an individual experience your sexuality? So it is what we assign meaning to sex. So we're talking about maybe our sexual values, our sexual relationships, our sexual behaviors, you know, like how do you control or limit sex and the meanings we assign to it. So we're looking at also what makes up our norms and our rules on sexuality. And Anthony, that's what's really fascinating, because one of the things that we always forget about is our environment. And what were we taught about sexuality growing up? What did our religious beliefs teach us? What did our parents think? What did they convey to us? Another big aspect is, what did we learn in school? Which, of course, as most of us know, who taught us sex ed? Well, having been a coach, I can tell you that I'm the one that taught eighth graders, seventh graders, and sixth graders all about sexuality before abstinence education. So this is, how do we view this? And what part of this does it make up to our life? So it's not just like one sex act where we're talking about it from a heterosexual, heteronormative position. It's everything.
I like the way you describe body parts, or parts, I should say, as culture, religion, and all of that. And I think that's so right on in terms of, you know, understanding where you came from to understand, you know, where you are today. And by the way, I was taught by nuns in the Catholic school, so I don't think they even said the word sex. So. Anyway, we hear a lot about older adults not having an interest in sex. Now, I think both you and I know that's true, but maybe our caregivers know that's true inside, but don't want to admit it when it comes to mom and dad.
Exactly. And this is actually one of the, in my opinion, most amusing myths that, you know, we all have this idea of we're not sexual past a certain age. Well, I don't know what cartoons and things you watched growing up, but one of my favorite shows was Benny Hill. The old Benny Hill shots, that where he is running around as a lecherous old man and chasing these young hot babes. And it was actually pretty funny. Well, this is honestly the way a lot of people look at older people, is either they're dirty old men or they're lecherous old crones. And talking about crones, that reminds me of the Robin Hood Men in Tights movie, where Cloris Leachman, that fabulous actress, played an old crone and is dragging young men off to her lair. So So we have this idea that, yeah, it's some kind of odd, perverse old person who enjoys sex, which is nothing to do with it. And it couldn't be further from the truth. As a matter of fact, over 61% of men and 37% of women over the age of 60 are still sexually active. And when, Anthony, we're talking about sexual activity, again, let's all remember, this isn't just heteronormative, heterosexual, penetrative sex, penis, vagina. It's not just that. It's everything else, too. In fact, a recent study just came out that was talking about how older adults are enjoying oral sex more than ever before. Now, it might be, of course, that we're reporting we're enjoying it more than ever before, because let's face it, that too was kind of a taboo topic back in the day. But in some of the studies, when we're talking about sexual activity, we're talking about any sexual activity. So whether it's mutual masturbation, whether it's oral sex, whether it's penetrative sex, whether it's toy play, whatever it is, this is what we're calling sexual activity. And, you know, I would say that the numbers are increasing, not just that we're increasing because of our awareness of sexual activity that's not specific to sexual intercourse, just like I mentioned a second ago about the study that said, hey, your grandparents are probably enjoying oral sex. Well, one of the things is, let's face it, baby boomers, changing the rules for everyone. So also, let's talk about something of what is a bigger issue within sex or sexual activity. Do you have a partner? That is a huge aspect of sexual activity.
Sure.
And so, you know, if you don't have a partner, this is problematic. Or if your partner has an illness or a disability, then you might struggle to maintain sexual activity. That's one reason why sexual health educators also include using mutual masturbation or using sexual toys within the construct of sexual activities. I also want to address very quickly the LGBTQ community and the aging community, because this is something that when teaching college students, a lot of times they say, oh, old people aren't gay. I always say, here's the thing. If I wake up and I'm 65 and I have loved vanilla ice cream my whole life, and all of a sudden I go, you know what? I am too old for vanilla ice cream. I'm not going to eat vanilla ice cream anymore. I think I'm going to eat strawberry because that's more appropriate for a 65-year-old. Hello, if I like vanilla, it doesn't mean I'm going to enjoy my strawberry. It's the same thing. If we wake up at 65 and we're LGBTQ, it's pretty certain that we're not all of a sudden going to go, hey, I woke up. I'm too old for this. Let me be straight now.
Let me try that heterosexual thing. Yeah. yeah. No, I'm just chuckling because obviously this is a great topic, but one that makes some people will cringe. Other people are going to say, this is fascinating. So hopefully our viewers have gotten so far through this video, because we really do want to talk about sexual health when aging. Like you said, you don't wake up at 65 and decide you have a different persuasion. I mean, you were what you were, and you are what you are. So, you know, you have this sexual health background. What can you tell us about, especially sexual health during aging?
Great question, Anthony, and something I think that all of our viewers will be interested in. You know, one of the things is we talk about the heterogeneity of our older adults and specifically their knowledge of their sexual health. So, you know, I just mentioned a little while ago, you know, we learned our sexual health from, as you said, nuns, our religious leaders, or maybe our coaches. And honestly, sometimes our coaches don't know everything. They might be great at football or basketball, but they don't know that much about sexual health. And so we also have a problem speaking to our physicians about our sexual health. And a lot of that has to do with, again, I'll go back to the first thing, our culture, our religion, and how we're taught, and even the words that we use. So this this whole idea of sexual health and aging, most people don't understand the changes within their reproduction system. And this is one of the greatest problems for older adults is, one, having that mythology and that stereotyping of saying, hey, you're old, you can't be interested. And also the lack of knowledge within even our healthcare profession. Now, we are getting much better at educating our physicians and nurses, as well as our intake persons, in making sure that sexual health is covered in the framework of the visit. But many people who are not in healthcare do not know that poor nutrition or certain medications or illnesses can contribute to sexual health challenges. They also not only might be hindered in talking to their sexual issues with their physicians, but they may think it's only age-related changes. You know, I'm getting old, so things don't work or feel the same way. And honestly, this is problematic because ED, erectile dysfunction, while many men are extremely concerned about it, will not discuss that with their physicians. Well, this honestly is one of the most discussed sexual health issues in prostate health. When we're talking about men over the age of 60, prostate cancer is the most common cause of all cancer death. And since one of the more common symptoms of prostate cancer is erectile difficulty, having an erection or not having an erection underscores the importance of speaking with your physician about your concerns. Now, women, a lot of times we focus completely on our whole thing of menopause and menstruation. And so whether we've had surgical menopause or medical menopause or even naturally occurring menopause or medical menopause, which is something that we talk about relatively little, that chemotherapy or radiation therapy can cause menopause to go to occur at any age. So whether you're in your 40s or your 50s or your 60s, 70s or 80s, these changes are very drastic for women. It includes, you know, urinary tract issues, vaginal infections, yeast infections and irritation, uterine prolapse, bladder prolapse is a big problem as well, especially for women who have had already a hysterectomy. And the urinary prolapse can cause issues within their intimacy, and therefore it doesn't help them through their sexual health and sexual functioning. So always tell women, when you see that you're having these problems, speak to your physician. You know, we talk a lot to our girlfriends, and so it's one great aspect of we can share information. And then we have a little bit of knowledge that might allow us to go on and speak with our physicians. Especially women are kind of used to having to talk to physicians about this because who has the children? We do. So if we've already experienced childbirth, we're a little bit more comfortable than men discussing it. Sure. One thing I do want to bring up though, Anthony, is that Dr. Clark Shirley and I wrote a wonderful book chapter on sexual health and normal changes in sexual function. It's very easy to read, even though it is in a nursing textbook. And this is included in some of the materials that we're offering our viewers. So I hope that they'll go in and read the material. And I want to say, if you're real interested in reading about your sexual health, this is a very easy to read chapter and gives you a lot of information on it.
No, that's great. So hopefully now our boomers have learned a little bit something about their own sexuality, but they're also caregivers. And let's go into this next realm where we go into long-term care, and maybe, in part of their caregiving duties, there was a decision made, hopefully a mutual one with the loved one, that maybe it was time to move into a more organized community of some sort. One thing I guess they weren't thinking about or aren't thinking about is how sexually active these communities are. And obviously being in the business, we know that they certainly are. So what can you talk about in terms of sexuality and long-term care settings?
Great topic, Anthony. And this is something that a lot of people struggle with. And let me say, not just the people who are living in the care setting, but also the facility staff, the nursing staff, the administration, and of course, as you just mentioned, those of us who may have parents or family members that we are caring for that are in long-term care settings. So let's go back and let's look again at what are we considering sexuality. And remember, sexuality is not just physical. This is what's very important. And I think a lot of people confuse this, particularly within long-term care. Sexuality is also intellectual and emotional connection. So here is the thing. I've lost my spouse. I move into a facility. I don't know anyone there. I don't have anyone to talk to. But there's this real nice gentleman or woman that I sit next to at dinner. And we strike up a great friendship. And we become really good friends. And very intimate friends. And, you know, on an intellectual and emotional level, people will say, oh, well, that's not good. You know, we can't do that. Well, actually, we can and we should. Because one of the things that we do know, let's think very quickly about how does this make us feel as an older adult? Well, one, what we're doing is an interpersonal relationship. And we are really saying that this intimate relationship, this sexual intimacy, it may be even from a flirting standpoint that we are experiencing sexual intimacy. It may be that we're having more of an emotional closeness that allows us to feel more intimate. Remember, what is our number one sex organ? Our brain. Sure. And so this is really important for those of us who work with persons in long-term care or who have relatives in long-term care. It doesn't necessarily mean that the older adult is participating in sexual activity. It is really more of an emotional closeness. Now, one of the other things that I think is really important that we consider is that all of this together might stress out everybody, right? Because you're a child and you're concerned about your mom or you're concerned about your dad. You know, one of the biggest issues within that is we might not want to see our parents have a relationship with someone other than our other parent. And it's very frustrating for those of us who may be caring for an older adult. Okay, so one thing that we always forget is our sexual rights. Now, let's face it, you and I know about what our sexual rights are as people who live on the outside and not within an institutional setting. I'm pretty sure even that at 16, 17, and 18, we were pretty vocal about our sexual rights and who we were able to date. I know I was. But one of the things is, what is sexual rights? And this is an extremely important issue within long-term care settings. This is having access to sexual health care and sexual health information. And this also is certain freedoms. So when we talk about freedoms, we're talking about whether to be sexually active, whether to choose or reject a sexual partner, or participate in a consensual relationship. And one of the biggest aspects within assisted living and other settings is the cognitively impaired residents, those who cannot consent. Well, this also, they still have sexual rights. And this is something that we all struggle with. But this is, again, where we have to understand our parent or our spouse or our partner who is in our care at a facility. And so one of the things that we see are sexual rights that are being used within long-term care settings. People deserve privacy. Let me just say this. Let's say that it's not just a sexual activity with another person, because again, here as boomers, we're going to go into assisted living and we're going to change the rules, I can assure you. So we might want more privacy. One of the things is masturbation. Is that a bad thing? Well, again, we go back to culture.
Yep.
What does our culture and religion say about it? But let's face it, we know people do it, right? So one of the things that we need to do is give our older persons autonomy to make these decisions and privacy to allow them to have time to have sexual activity, whether it's with someone else or whether it is by themselves. Sure. Because self-pleasure is still part of your sexual health. And if we look at that from a physiological standpoint, I think we would agree that that is very healthy for older adults and for any of us. Now, one thing I would say, Gail Dahl has written some information on nursing homes and really how to approach this topic. She's done a lot of study on it. And let me mention that I have included that in some of the material that we have available for our viewers.
Great. Great. And, you know, it's interesting. I do know that I think there's the Jewish Home for the Aging in New York City, or I don't know if it's in the Bronx or Brooklyn, whatever. People look them up. They're pretty progressive in terms of policies and procedures around that. I also would mention, and this kind of gets back to, you know, consent and where, you know, and levels of dementia and all this. I read about, anecdotally, I guess, of a son who, I guess, barged in accidentally on his father and this woman having sexual activity in the assisted living. He was, of course, appalled, and his immediate knee-jerk reaction was to pull his father out of the place. Now, the woman clearly did have dementia, but what was interesting is that as soon as he left the assisted living, she passed, but 2 or 3 weeks later. So I guess people don't understand that just the intimacy, the contact, is all part of it as well.
Exactly, Anthony. And this is part of the thing that we talk about from an older adult standpoint of skin hunger. So here's the thing. I have two beautiful little five-year-old girls. I hug them. I play with their hair. I hug them and tell them I love them. I pat them on their hand and their arm. What happens when they come home from school? They immediately run and they want to hug me. They want to hug daddy. They want to hug their friends. They love to hug. Well, what is this doing? We know that this is giving endorphins and making people happy. Why do we encourage people to go to NICU units and hold babies who are unable to be held except for certain times? If their parents can't be there, we have caregivers that go that realize that skin hunger in an infant can cause failure to thrive. Hello, this is the exact same thing. Now, I'm not saying, of course, that older adults are just like babies in a NICU, but let's face it, we all need hugs, we all need touch, we all need that skin-to-skin contact. And if we're not getting that from the staff, from our family, you know, we're not going to thrive. And clearly within this anecdotal evidence or whatever, you know, the newspapers and we hear this a lot. Someone dies after their partner, their emotional, intellectual partner or sexual partner leaves the nursing home. They too have failure to thrive.
Yep.
It's a huge part of who we are. Touch is extremely important. And it really keeps us happy and keeps us going. It's another reason, from anthropological reasons, that we live in groups, that we don't just go off on our own. If you watch Naked and Afraid, you find out that if you're by yourself, you're not going to survive and you're probably going to have a mental breakdown. So this is one of the things that you know, it sounds kind of funny to put it that way, but we have to have people. We're social animals.
Yep, absolutely. Well, this has absolutely been fascinating. Final question. What are the three most important things that caregivers need to know about sex or sexuality?
Great question. I think we're going to come back to the consent. So Let's talk briefly about consent. So can your client, can your parent, can your significant other consent to sexual activity? And one of the things is, we're not just saying within a long-term care setting,
sure,
because we have to also consider the perspective of being a spouse caring for an older adult at home. Can they have consent? Can they form consent? If they can form consent, autonomy is the best option. And also, again, let me remind people who are either staff or clinicians or parents, significant others, or children, not all sexual intimacy means people are having sexual intercourse. Let's remember that. The next thing is understanding. You know, a lot of times if we're talking about dementia, a lot of us as gerontologists will simply say, hey, you got to remember, they're not in our world. We are in theirs. So we may have to adjust our attitudes. We may have to adjust our own needs. We may have to adjust our need for sexual contact if an illness changes a relationship. We have to adjust. They do not. And I think that's extremely important for all of us to remember. Also, one thing that I think is extremely important is talk. We need to talk. We need to talk to, first of all, others if they're in the same situation. This is one of the reasons why there's some great support groups out there. So a lot of times if your significant other, your parent is within a facility, you'll find a support group within that facility as well. These are great opportunities for you to take advantage of. The other thing, you might need to speak to a therapist. Be sure to talk to a therapist on your own needs, your own self-care. Because having a parent or a grandparent in a nursing facility is extremely stressful. And you may feel like your life has to be put on hold, much like we all did when we were parents, right? At the very beginning of our child's life. We have to put our stuff on hold and take care of them. But if we're not well, how are we going to care for others? And I think that is a hugely important thing. And then we may need, you know, this safe space. So when I talk about safe space, it might be not just our therapist, but do you have friends? Do you go out to eat? Do you have social connections? Because your social connections as a caregiver are just as important as the person in the facility. So you need to take care of yourself. And while we're talking about this and in talking and communication, let's talk very briefly. I want to bring up elder speak. And what we call this is communication over accommodation. So if you have a little child and you're saying, we're not going to have a cookie now, are we? Because dinner is in a few minutes. we understand that we're speaking to a small child and trying to keep them from crying because they want a cookie. And they're not going to put up with no cookie just because dinner is not on the table yet. And they're going to pitch a fit. Well, here is the thing. We can't speak to that to older adults. Sure. So we can't tell an older adult, you can't have that cookie because you're a diabetic. Who are you to eat a cookie? Whatever the older adult is asking for, honestly, this goes back to autonomy. Let's keep remembering autonomy as well within this. But we're also not allowed to speak down to people who are older. And a lot of times our elder speak comes across as sweetie, honey, precious, baby. This is not giving respect to our elders. And so it's over accommodation. We're speaking over them, or we're speaking around them. We might even think we're being nice in saying, hi, Miss Smith, how are we feeling today? Well, you know, frankly, sometimes I want to go, we aren't feeling like anything. I'm feeling a certain way. But as I always tell my students in gerontology, you know, the only people that get away with saying sweetie and honey to older people and any of us are the waitress at the local diner who's giving us our lunch and feeding us and giving us our sweet tea. So unless it's coming with a side of pie and some sweet tea, we need to back that back up and say, good morning, Mrs. Jones. How are you doing today? You know, are you having a nice day? Isn't the weather lovely? We don't need to change and adjust our speech with our older adults. The other thing is, let's remember, just because we're old doesn't mean we can't hear. Now, some of us struggle, but it doesn't mean you need to yell or say things loudly. Just as if you're in a wheelchair, it's your legs don't work. It's not that your hearing doesn't work. So we have these types of issues. This is something that even as caregivers, we struggle with. And we have to say, you know, I have to treat mom or dad or my spouse, partner, significant other, the same way I treat them when they're at home. And this is especially important because it puts in your mind as well, this is what I'm saying. This puts in your mind as the caregiver that the person you are taking care of is an older adult. They're not a five-year-old or a three-year-old. And I think that respect is extremely important for us to remember.
Absolutely. So I really want to thank you because you kind of painted this whole picture of all the components to kind of go into this so that people are more aware and sensitized to what's happening with mom or dad around these issues and with their own self. So I really want to thank you for participating in the Caregiver Summit. I'm sure in future summits, we can explore specific issues and we'll go down certain tracks and spend some time on, we just kind of painted a picture overall today, but hopefully in the future we can chat again.
That'd be great, Anthony. And I've really enjoyed it. And I hope this is helpful for so many people.